Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at content from our earlier years, sometimes single stories, sometimes whole episodes. Keep in mind that years ago, people might have worded things differently than they would today. As always, the title of the whole series, Risk, is itself a content warning. This week, a story that Joel Kim Booster first shared on the podcast in December of 2016. Here's Joel now with a story we call Anonymous Leaks.
Evening. So, the first time I saw my girlfriend, Addie Hall, in a newspaper, it was shortly after Katrina. And it was the New York Times. And the headline read, Katrina Holdouts on High Ground. And it was a story about how Addie and her boyfriend Zach stayed after the storm, and how Addie would flash her tits to first responders to ensure that they patrolled their street. And so I just imagine my friend Addie and this line of ambulances and fire trucks and cop cars and tanks going by, and her whipping out old Lactatia Niplata in exchange for bottles of whiskey and canned goods. And it made me happy. And there was this picture of them, and she looked really happy, and she had this like shit-eating grin, like, look at me, bitches. And she had these little children's glasses on her head, and the frames were shaped like stars, you know, and she always wore those when she felt a certain way, and she was standing by this strapping young Marine that she had, like, hooked up with, and she looked happy, and they became this viral sensation because they were these, like, two young people that found love in the midst of the wreckage of Katrina, you know, and she looked really happy, and she was also happy because the world had been reduced to the size of what she was kind of used to, which was just surviving, you know, just getting by, making enough money to put a roof over her head, and she knew how to survive. She knew how to survive better than anyone I knew, and when I first met her, that's what we did together. We survived. I first met her, I was a short order cook in the French Quarter at this place called the CD Saloon, and it was on Burgundy Street. And at night, I would throw open the doors to the street, and me and my friend, Homeless Gregory, would decorate the door with Mylar curtains and Mardi Gras beads and a disco ball and play music, and we called it the Side Pocket. And it was my first, like, speakeasy. It was my first club in New Orleans, you know? And one night I recognized there was this car that had been parked outside for several days. And tonight there was this person in the car, and it was this girl, and she was naked. And she was getting dressed and doing her hair and doing her makeup, and I'm watching, and she sees me and she's like, what the fuck are you looking at, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. She gets out and she pulls down the skin-tight wife beater that she just pulled out of, you know, the package, and she says, hi, I'm Addie Hall. And she points to her left tit and she says, this is Niplata. And she points to her right tit and she says, this is Lactatia. And we're very happy to meet you. And I said, my name's Dennis. And I'm very happy to meet y'all. And then, then the next thing I know, she comes out of the bar. She's got two High Lifes and two shots of Jameson. And the Side Pocket's pumping. It's me and Homeless Gregory and Addie. And, you know, there's a couple girls on their way home from their house cleaning gigs. And I can see Bianca Del Rio across the street getting ready in her window for the night. And there's some gays going by. And there's this 40-year-old Bulgarian stripper named Stepka. And she's like, it's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. And it was like Confederacy dunces come to life, you know? I was like, everything I dreamt of in New Orleans was right here. And I also met this new friend, and her name was Addie. And I knew she was special, and I knew she was going to be my friend for a very long time. And sure enough, within 2 weeks, we moved into each other. She had scored a squat-type apartment on Orleans Avenue. And we lived there, and we kind of, like, lived the dream. It was like we were in this movie together, you know? And then I remember, it didn't take long before I realized that although Addie and I were there, and we were at the same place, you know, and we were at the same time, and we were surviving together, and we were doing this thing together. But the routes that got us there were very different, you know. Personally, I was like running towards something, you know. I come to New Orleans to have a better life, a more fulfilled life, and I had dreams, and I was a writer, and I wanted to do things, you know. And Addie was running from something, and she was escaping, and something horrible in her past, and she was trying to escape demons. But no matter how far she ran or how long, the demons were always right there, and those demons were very unpredictable. Life was hard with Addie, but we had a lot of good times, you know? She turned me on to the filmmaker, John Waters. And he was in town one day, and she was like, she convinced me to go to Julia Street to some gallery, and, you know, cross canal, which we never ventured. And, you know, we get there, and she, you know, makes her way through the wave of hipsters to John Waters, and they have this, like, moment, and he tells her, he signs her a copy of Catcher in the Rye, and he tells her that, you know, this is the most popular book amongst all degenerates and inmates in the country, you know. And, you know, we left, and she felt good, and she felt special, and she felt like he got her, you know. She felt like a star for a minute, and there are lots of times like that, you know. There are lots of times like that, but there are also a lot of times where you just didn't know where it was going to go. Like, a good time could go really bad, really fast. We both had a similar sense of humor, and we were pranksters. And once we took this old toilet, and we put it on the sidewalk on Orleans Street in the corridor where we lived, and then we put this mannequin in the toilet with her head, like, in the bowl with a wig and some Mardi Gras beads and a hand grenade, and then we just, like, sat by the stoop of the apartment, and we just watched people and, like, the reaction to this this mannequin, right? And it was fucking hilarious. People were like, whoa, you know? And then you see it dawn on them, like, A, it's a mannequin. B, that's a fucking toilet on the street that she's puking in, you know? And it was all fun and games until some old man, drunk old guy, you know, he's cruising down, and he sees the mannequin. And y'all, he starts creeping up on that mannequin. And he's all like, ooh, you know? And he gets close, and as he gets down, and right before he grabs her tit, he realizes, you know, this bitch ain't real. But not before Addie pegs him as a predator. And she's on him like white on rice. And she beats the shit out of this guy. She's kicking him, and she's cussing him. And I'm like, I'm trying to calm her down. And I said, Addie, it's just a mannequin. And she looks at me, and she says, fuck you. It's a mannequin this time. Now. And scenes like that became more and more common with Addie, you know? I never knew what we were going to get into or how her reaction was going to be. But I remember, like, the times at home that we spent alone together, those were really the times that I really got to know her and love her. And we would be at home, and we'd share things. She was a ballet dancer. She taught me how to pirouette and, like, do twirls. And we'd do it in our, like, high-ceilinged, beautiful little apartment in the French Quarter, and we'd listen to Irma Thomas, you know, and she loved Irma Thomas, and we really had a lot of good times. I remember one night, she, after way too much to drink, she says, I'm a Blanche. I said, what? She said, anyone worth knowing is a Blanche, a Stella, or a Stanley, and I'm a Blanche, and you're a Stanley. But she said, but you're a gay Stanley. So you won't hurt me. And a little while later, she took my hand and she put it under her left breast nipplata. And she said, do you feel that? And I did. And I felt this, like, hard little, like, golf ball lump under her boob. She didn't say anything. And I didn't say anything, and I knew she didn't want me to say anything, that she just needed someone to share this burden with. And so much made sense to me about Addie. It was the abuse and the running away, and now this lump, and it made sense why she lived every day like it was her last. She always claimed, I'm never going to live past 30. Die young, leave a pretty corpse. Die young, leave a pretty corpse. After that, it wasn't very long before we got thrown out of the apartment after Addie beat a neighbor with a 2x4 for accidentally elbowing her in the face at a bar, you know, and he was drunk. And I knew it was for the best, and I moved to the Marigny with Stefka, the Bulgarian stripper. And Addie hopped around the French Quarter for a long time, and we remained friends, and we would visit each other and come by, and she'd come to my house, and we'd smoke each other out, and we'd drink, and we would just talk, and we'd borrow money from each other, you know, we just lived. But I felt like I was providing this safe space for her, like the safe place where she could come and like let her guard down and just kind of relax. And she did. And I remember once, I hadn't seen her for a long time, and she came by and she told me that she had shacked up with a buggy driver in the French Quarter. And she said that she had found gay porn and a dildo in his closet, and she confronted him by slapping him across the head with the dildo. Well, he, in return, hit her so hard that he broke her jaw. Fuck him. Yeah. And she recovered, you know, and she was doing all right. And the next thing I knew, she was bartending at this place on Charter Street. And that's where she met Zach, you know, the Katrina dream angel. He was a cook there for a little while. And then Katrina happened, and the whole, like, Zach and Addie, Katrina love story happened. And time passed, and I hadn't seen her in a while. And I was kind of like, maybe this is a good thing, you know? Maybe she's doing all right. And indeed, she was. And I ran into her, and she came over to my house, and this was like the end of September in 2006. So it was like a year, a little over a year past Katrina. And she came over to my house, and we just caught up, and she told me, you know, we laughed about how they'd become this media sensation, you know, and she was beamed with pride, and she told me that she was bartending at the Spotted Cat, and that she loved it, and that she'd met Irma Thomas, and that things were going really well, and that she was moving from Governor Nichols to this place on Rampart Street, and that she was going to break up with Zach. No, she was fixing to break up with Zach because she had caught him getting fucked by a FEMA instructor for crystal meth. Right? And I'm like, okay. And she said that she was going to threaten him by saying that she was going to tell his estranged wife and his children that he was this gay-for-pay hustler unless he moved out of the apartment in which they shared the lease. And, you know, at that time, I was just like, this is just another situation. This is another cycle with Addie. I didn't know it was going to be the last time I'd see her, but to be honest, every time I saw Addie, I kind of thought it might be the last time I saw her. So a couple weeks passed by, and it was October 16th, and I pick up a copy of the Times-Picayune, and there on the front page, there's Addie and Zach, this picture, that same picture. But this time the headline was very different. Man chops up body and cooks corpse. We'll just let that sink in for a minute. It's taken me 10 years to say that. And it reads, the police were called to a suicide site. And when they got there, they found Zach's body. And in his pocket, there was a note. And that note instructed them to go to an apartment on Rampart Street above Priestess Miriam's voodoo shop, where they would find the remains to his girlfriend, Addie Hall. And they also found a journal. And this journal, you know, he recorded everything he did on those days, and which included how he calmly strangled my friend to death with his bare hands before he turned the thermostat down to 60 and went and hit the town for a week and partied and drank and like spent all his money, and he would intermittently come back to the apartment where he would dismember my friend limb by limb. He placed her head in a pot on the stove with carrots and potatoes. He placed her limbs and her arms in the oven and her torso in the refrigerator before he instructed the cops to call his estranged wife and to tell them that he was sorry and that he loved them. And then he jumped to his death from the top of the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel. And then, you know, the days and weeks that passed, I'm like mourning this, my friend, and I'm like, and this shit, you know, this is like some crazy, you know, I'm processing this shit. But then she becomes this media sensation again, because all those places that reported about them as the Katrina couple now have this wet dream of a follow-up story only a year later. And there was these like sensational headlines everywhere about the tragic fucking love story. And I remember, like, I wasn't really that shocked, and I felt guilty that I wasn't that shocked that this was Addie, and I wasn't even surprised, but I do remember thinking, like, Addie's gonna be on a haunted history tour. And she would love that. And, you know, that was 10 years ago, and now, tonight, from here forever, you can take that Rampart streetcar past Addie's building, and you can see a guy in a top hat and a cane and a cape, and you can watch him tell tourists that how the Marine became possessed by a demon. You know, he'll tell the story of the tragic New Orleans love story of how this, you know, Marine became possessed by a demon that emanated from the voodoo shop downstairs, and how he chopped up her body and then cooked it in a cannibalistic voodoo ritual before jumping to his own death. Addie could have writ that shit herself, you know? I mean, she's a legend. Now, down at the Always, these Rampart Street drag queens, they'll come up once in a while and they'll be like, "Old Dennis, Addie, she still haunts that place. Her spirit is there." And I look at them and I think in my head, of course she does. You go, girl. It's getting hot in here. So
thank you. Thank you so much.
That's all for this week's Classic Risk Singles episode. Now, don't miss out on our regular full-length episodes. There's a brand new one every Tuesday. And everything you might want to know about us is at risk-show.com.